Well, good morning, friends on the radio. It's Wednesday. It's 9 a.m., and it's time for the conversation. This is our live call-in show, just like Joanne said, and we're hoping to hear from you today. The number's 503-325-0010, and we love first-time callers, and we love our old friends to call in as well. So I just hope to hear from everybody today. I'm hoping that we can continue our conversation on mental health and perhaps take it in a slightly different direction than we did last week. Last week we talked about a therapy model called cognitive behavioral therapy, and that brought up some comments and some feedback from some friends and some fellow staff members and from some listeners about how trauma plays into mental health. We've probably all heard of PTSD, post-traumatic stress disorder, so we know that trauma can have lasting effects on us. But do we really understand it? Do we have enough information from person to person about how to deal with trauma? And gosh, in the past year and a half, I would say that the trauma has been coming pretty fast and furious, and how are we keeping up with it? You know, I think about folks like school teachers who are traumatized themselves by the process of teaching during a pandemic, not to mention handling students with all new levels of trauma as well. Teachers are not counselors, and yet they're expected to identify when a student is in need. So there has to be some skill there. There has to be some training. And from the little research that I've done, it doesn't appear that there's a lot of training for public school teachers. So if the conversation's centering around trauma, let's just talk about it. What is trauma? How does it affect us? Can we heal from trauma? Have you experienced trauma that still haunts you? Have you had success addressing and releasing past trauma through different therapy methods or other ways? Do you have experience with therapies meant to help release trauma from the memory and body? Things like tapping or EDMR. So here is today's icebreaker, and it's directly related to the topic. So let's get the phones ringing. There's three vacant lines. I'm hoping that someone will be comfortable enough to share with the group, and this can be anonymous, of course, that you would name between one and three traumatic experiences in your life that you believe might still be with you to this day, and they're affecting your mental health. So think about that. I'm going to cut to a little bit of music and come right back to you. Thanks for tuning in today. 503-325-0010. Okay, so how does trauma affect the brain? Let's get into this. When we go through trauma, our brains don't function like they normally do. We shift into a survival mode, like a deer in the headlights. Our brains direct all of our mental and physical energy towards dealing with that immediate threat until it's gone. In normal situations, this state fades over time. Trauma isn't just something we experience after being in a war zone or in a violent situation. We can be traumatized by our relationships, for example, a betrayal trauma. Sometimes our initial trauma response sticks, making it difficult for us to function as we'd like. Trauma can change the way we think, feel, and act for a long time after the initial event. For many people, this could mean flashbacks or nightmares, a constant feeling of being on edge, loneliness, anger, intrusive thoughts and memories, self-destructive actions, and more. All these things are very normal responses to trauma, but they don't always go away on their own. The good news is that patterns that might seem permanent can actually be reversed. With the right approach and knowledge, you can shift your brain towards healing. However, it can be difficult to see a path forward without first understanding how and why these changes happen. So, a little more detail about the brain's response to trauma. Trauma can change your brain on many levels, from the way you make decisions down to your immediate subconscious responses to the world around you. Part of the reason it can be so hard to overcome the effects of trauma is that it goes after several areas of your brain at once. According to a 2006 study by NIH, trauma mainly affects three important parts of your brain: the amygdala, which is your emotional and instinctual center, the hippocampus, which controls your memory, and the prefrontal cortex, which is responsible for regulating your emotions and impulses. All three parts work together to manage stress. So this is where it gets interesting. When you're reminded of a traumatic experience, your amygdala, your emotional and survival center, goes into overdrive, acting just as it would if you were experiencing that trauma for the first time. Your prefrontal cortex also becomes suppressed, so you're less capable of controlling your fear. You're stuck in a purely reactive state. Now, this is the particularly interesting part to me. Meanwhile, trauma also leads to reduced activity in the hippocampus, one of whose functions is to distinguish between past and present. In other words, your brain can't tell the difference between the actual traumatic event and the memory of it. It perceives things that trigger memories of traumatic events as threats themselves. So trauma can cause your brain to remain in a state of hypervigilance, suppressing your memory and impulse control, and trapping you in a constant state of strong emotional reactivity. Well, that's an introduction to trauma and how it affects the brain, and we do have a caller. Good morning. You're on the air.
Good morning.
Hi there.
Yeah, hi. So I want to throw a little wrench into this discussion.
Oh, please do.
I listened to you last week, and I have basically, I'm in my 60s, and so I think maturity and experience helps to relieve the burden of trauma and depression.
Uh-huh.
And certainly I was in therapy for 35 years along the roles that you're describing. I have PTSD, and so I understand everything you're saying, but I want to share a new insight that I am experiencing, and that is the gut-brain axis and how our diet can contribute to the microbiome of the gut. And there's actually, I started watching online, on YouTube basically, because I was interested in healing my own health benefits. And a lot of them were gut issues. And one thing led to another, to another, to another, till I landed on a diet lifestyle that has changed my life forever. Because for the first time in 67 years, I'm not depressed, nor am I anxious. And they had talked about this in the YouTube video. Certainly people are healing autoimmune diseases and different things with this approach. But the fact is, the brain and the gut are just like twins. They need each other. And the better we feed our gut, the better our brain works. And I'm not a scientist. I'm not a nutritionist. So I can't in any way, shape, or form, promote or say that I know the exact science of it. But there are multiple YouTube gurus that can explain all of this in greater detail than I ever can. But I just wanted to kind of throw that in, Grant, that diet may be a contributing factor and in association with therapy, maybe people need to think about that.
You know, I don't think this is throwing a wrench in the conversation. I think this is using your wrench to help tighten up some bolts and add some new components to it. I think this is great. I'm a big believer in the gut. What did you call it? The gut brain?
The brain gut axis. AXIS.
Right. The gut brain gut axis. Have you heard of a diet called the GAPS diet?
I have. And what I, and again, not to the extreme on this, but I have issues with vegetables. I cannot eat plants.
Mm-hmm.
So basically, I started off with ketogenic, basically this all boils down to low carbohydrate, the insulin, insulin resistance, all those body functions and systems that are so interrelated. And I've actually landed on a meat-based diet, which is, again, it's changed my life. And not only is my gut, leaky gut, better, but I keep going back to, I don't have any anxiety anymore, and I don't have fear. And I had that for 66 years of my life. And I just want to share that with people, that there is hope out there, but it takes a commitment. You know, and finally I got committed to my own health and found this as a great benefit that I didn't expect.
Yeah, that's great. I agree with you 100% that purely psychological approaches to our issues are not necessarily going to fix us when the problem is somewhere else, right?
Correct. I mean, I spent a lot of money, millions of dollars, not really, but with some very good therapists, and they helped at the time because that's what I knew and needed at the time, but I wasn't getting better. It was a Band-Aid. And so I am blessed and thankful, you know, there's a particular therapist here locally that just changed my life forever, Caitlin Stecker, but the fact is it wasn't enough, and I kept going back to, I think depression stems from anxiety. I just do. Mm-hmm. Fear and anxiety are the same thing, mm-hmm. and I think depression is the next step above that. So I think for me, healing the anxiety and fear was always a goal, but never accomplishable. And again, I can't tout this for the rest of the world, but all I know is that changing my diet, removing carbohydrates, learning that plants cause me great gut discomfort, and increasing fat in my diet. It's against everything, against standard American diet approach, mostly what Western doctors will understand and know about any of this. So it's not for the faint of heart, but there is absolutely science-based information on the internet that will support this, and a lot of anecdotal information as well.
Well, I think that the takeaway here is, and what I'm sort of trying to get at, is that I think we all have the right to live free from anxiety and depression.
Yes.
And we shouldn't be prisoners of trauma. And, you know, in your case, it's almost like you're a prisoner of the diet that you were sort of encouraged to take on.
And then
you had to fight that fight to learn, you know, what the issues really were.
Right.
Yeah.
I think we're all prisoners of what we're told is the standard American diet. And I guess there's a guy on the internet that calls it the proper human diet. And I think everybody's got to figure out what that is for them. And
that it's like, not the same for everybody.
It isn't. But I encourage people to open up their parameters a little bit and consider that what they put in their mouth may be causing and prevailing over them getting improved on their depression and anxiety.
Yeah, it could be the cause. It could be exacerbating other components. Yeah, I just 1,000% agree that everybody should be thinking about their diet as a critical part of self-care.
Correct.
Well, thanks for your call this morning. Anything else for us?
No, thanks, Grant.
Take care. We had another caller. Good morning.
Good morning, Graham. This is Jim.
Hey, Jim.
Hi. I'm a retired registered nurse. I retired almost 12 years ago. I did hospital nursing for probably 25 years of my career. And to this day, last night, for example, I had a dream. I was in the hospital. I was behind in my assignment. I could not find the scrubs. I had to wear scrubs. I couldn't find a pair. When I found the scrubs finally, I could not find my patient assignment. And I think this all goes back to situations. I remember one in particular where a flight from China nonstop to Chicago diverted to Anchorage where I was working, because a passenger had a heart attack on the plane. They brought him into our critical care unit, cardiac care unit, And he had resuscitated him several times during the night. And it was morning report was over about 7:15, and right in the middle of report, the guy coded again. And they started doing CPR. They sent the people, security over to get his wife from the residential place where people could stay. And they could not get this guy to come back. He was absolutely dead. And here's the wife. She's just coming undone, and she's just crying and crying and crying and saying, "Oh, don't leave me here," you know, and all this stuff. I couldn't handle it. I had to get away for a few minutes. I went in another room and actually cried. Well, last night, I mean, this is in my mind. It doesn't keep me awake. It doesn't haunt me during the day, but it comes out in my sleep sometimes. It's almost like a frustration because I was unable to do anything to help this person, and that's what we do as nurses is to help and try to make things better. And if you can't, that causes a certain degree of trauma that I'm 78 years old, and this will haunt me. I hate to use the word haunt because these aren't nightmares. They're kind of thing you wake up and say, "Oh, my God, I retired 12 years ago. Quit having these dreams."
Yeah.
But they're in there.
Well, I think we know what you mean by haunt.
Yeah.
I was having a conversation with my friend and my roommate yesterday about, let's see, what was it? Oh, it was about when can I expect stress dreams about, like, having forgotten my mask or something pandemic-related. And, you know, none of us had had any yet, but it does seem like those kinds of stress dreams occur many, many years after that stressor stops being active. So one of my big ones is that I'm at school and I've just forgotten to go to a class all term and it's finals time and I can't drop it. And, you know, it's like it's like a scheduling stress type thing, or the airport dreams, you know, the night before you have a flight and you dream you're late for your flight. So I wonder if we'll be haunted by the pandemic in that way.
Possible. It depends on how much it affects you in a way, you know.
Yeah.
There are different levels of things that affect you in your lifetime. And as you become an older gentleman, you will have dreams. Once in a while, I still have dreams. Clear back when I first got out of the Marine Corps in 1964, I got a job in a paper mill in Camas, Washington. And it was a hard, frustrating job in many regards. And once in a while, I'll have a paper mill dream, you know. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, they're in there, but, you know, I mean, it's just your history coming out to entertain you at night. I'll use the word entertain because that's what dreams are, prophetic or entertainment, either one, you know, reminiscing. But, yeah, that's my contribution, and trauma can come at you in so many different forms that day-to-day living is actually, in some regards, trauma.
So you mentioned that experience with the gentleman that had a heart attack as being a traumatic experience in your life. Have you ever pursued any kind of treatment or therapy?
No.
To address
stuff? Feel I need it. Things like that happened. You know, I have many patients over the years that coded and died in front of me. Some were sadder than others, and some were more memorable than others. But I think that's just the price you pay for the job you do, the career you choose to do in your lifetime. You know, you'll have dreams someday when you get to be an old guy. You say, "Oh man," you'll have a dream of something at the radio station wasn't going quite right. You go, "Oh God dang it," you know. But it'll be something that's completely resolved because it's done. It's history, but it's rolling around in your memory banks as an event that you will forever remember. You know, and it could come back as a dream. You could call it trauma if you wish, but it's in there, and you will experience. Just like you're talking about your being missing a class at school, or thinking, "Oh my God, I'm on the wrong flight," or "I missed my flight," or whatever. Those are in there, and regardless of how intense the situation is, it's still an event that can come out as trauma and will come back. And to use your word that you said mine was okay, it'll haunt you forever.
Yeah.
There's good haunts and bad haunts, you know, so it's not to be alarmed by. And no, I don't think I need treatment. Considering my age and what I've done with my life, I'm an okay guy, you know.
I wonder, and not picking on you specifically, but it seems like there is a reluctance, and probably maybe more so on the part of men, you know, that I don't need that. I'm fine. You know,
I think you're right.
We're taught to be stoic and unemotional.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely 100% correct, because we don't want to be seen as whiners or whatever, you know. Mm-hmm. And if a person needs psychiatric, if you will, care to get past some event that was really traumatic for them, that's fine, do it. But I don't figure that I need it. These dreams aren't waking me up screaming in my sleep. I would hesitate to say that they're entertainment, but they give me something to do while I'm sleeping.
Yeah, and like I said, not specifically with you, but I get the sense that there is a lot of there's so many people that have it worse than I do.
Oh, yeah.
That I don't deserve to be taking up the time, you know, of a...
Yeah, you know, that's kind of the false prophet, too, because everybody came from somewhere, you know, and mm-hmm. everybody's life is theirs uniquely, and some are better than others by objective standards, but it's their subjective standard is how they deal with it and whether they need treatment or not. So I would never hesitate to say to somebody who was having trouble with a past event, yeah, go talk to somebody. It's a good thing to do if you need it.
Absolutely. And think about all the different ways you can approach it, whether it's
exactly.
talking
yep.
to somebody or whether it's a diet. And there was a couple more that I was going to hit on today.
Yeah.
Well, cool. Hey, Jim, good to hear your voice. Thanks for calling in.
You bet. Take care, man.
You too. Bye. Bye. If you're just tuning in, it's 22 past the hour of 9 o'clock. You're listening to KMUN. This is The Conversation. My name's Graham, and we are talking about mental health and, in particular, trauma and the effects of trauma and the ways that we have treated trauma. And so I hope to hear from more of you, 503-325-0010. I hope you're brave enough to talk about your experiences so that it might be able to help other folks listening as well. So I was reading to you from this article from wholewellnesstherapy.com, How Does Trauma Affect the Brain and What It Means for You? And so we talked about the brain responses to trauma, but now let's talk about the healing process a little bit while we wait for that next caller to call in, 503-325-0010. So the healing process. You know what? We got another call, and I'm not going to make you wait. Good morning.
Hey, good morning, Graham.
It's Paul.
You know, hi.
Hey, good morning.
You know, I listened to last week's show very interestedly. But, you know, I've been thinking about it, and, you know, I've had trauma throughout my whole life. And I've had counseling starting about 14 and lasting to about 18, and now I'm back into it. But I'm beginning to think that actually the trauma I have experienced has actually made me a better person. Maybe that's a justification. I don't know. But
well, that sounds like a best-case scenario.
I think so. But, gosh, what else did I want to say? I think it's something that forms you. I think everybody has experienced trauma. I'm having trauma right now, given the state of politics in this country.
Yeah, I think we're all experiencing that at some level.
Yeah, I take 7 deep breaths.
And when that stops working, take 8.
There you go.
Well, I'm curious, Paul, you know, you said you've had trauma your whole life and that it's made you a better person. That means you must have been able to process it. Because it seems like unprocessed trauma is the stuff where it gets tricky for folks. So do you think that you have a good mechanism for working through it? Or what do you attribute to it not having a negative effect on you?
I think counseling and just having a directed personality. But I think the counseling has been really worthwhile. I started when I was 14 and did that up until about 18. I've just restarted counseling with a very good person, and it really helps just to speak your mind and funnel all that stuff into a bottle that can be inspected and poured out.
Yeah, even that visualization seems like it can help you deal with trauma.
Yeah.
Pouring it into a bottle and taking a look at it and then throwing it down the drain.
There you go. But I'm so glad to hear you back on the air.
Well, thanks, Paul. Thanks for calling in.
Okay, you take care.
You take care, too. Have a great day.
Bye-bye.
Line two, that's you. You're up. Good morning.
Good morning. I would like to talk about how exercise and physical activity deals with stress and trauma. Too many people don't do that, and it really affected me. I've been doing yoga for 35 years plus, and every day I do it, it sets up the day perfectly. And then if you run for a mile or two or you walk, it also helps to relax. And if you do yoga before you go to bed, it really helps you sleep really well. So it's physical activity that really can mitigate that stress and all that stuff that's going on right now. So I encourage people to get active and dance if they can't go outside.
Excellent suggestions.
Thank you.
Thank you. It's the conversation, and we're talking about taking good care of ourselves. You may not think you've got trauma down there, deep in that gut or deep in the brain, but maybe you do. Self-care is always important, and there's lots of great ways to treat it through diet, through exercise, physical activity. Let's talk more about that healing process. So it might seem like trauma does irreversible damage to your brain, but that is not true. Our brains are extremely adaptable. Neuroplasticity is the key word here. The brain's ability to form new connections, which explains why we can rewire our brains to reverse trauma's damaging effects. Our brains are more susceptible to change than many people think. And even though overcoming trauma is a difficult process, you're actually changing the way your brain works, adding new pathways, increasing the functions of certain areas, and strengthening connections. It's the same mechanism that allows us to grow and change by learning. And all of that sounds like it's going to be benefited from exercise and a good diet that works for you. Not every diet works for everyone. During the healing process, you can actually rewire and retrain your brain to reverse the effects of trauma. You can reinforce your prefrontal cortex and get back rationality and control. You can strengthen your hippocampus and help your memory work how it's supposed to. And you can subdue the hyperactive amygdala, which will help bring you peace. With time and the right therapeutic methods, you can find a way to overcome trauma right down to your neurons. So, what do we think about treatment options? I heard from a friend today about EMDR, as well as tapping therapy. Has anyone ever tried one of those? So in tapping, you tap on acupressure points on your body, and it diffuses the emotional charge. And then in EMDR, you follow a physical prompt, like a bouncing ball on a screen that moves left and right, or a therapist's hand moving back and forth in front of you, while you focus on the emotion. So both of these techniques involve you deciding on a traumatic memory to hold in your mind and even feel where it is impacting your body. People tend to hold tension in their stomach areas and neck areas, for instance. And boy, doesn't the neck just connect the gut and the brain. So a lot of therapy focuses on talking through problems, but for very difficult and intense feelings like shame, fear, rage, these all create physical trauma in the body. And so that's why tapping or EMDR could be helpful. You need to release the physical hold these emotions have on you so you can think through what to do. There's lots of good information on both of those modalities online. If either of them sound interesting, take a peek. The tapping involves acupressure, which can kind of lead to a whole other rabbit hole of information about how energy travels through your body, according to Eastern medicine and sciences. Well, it's half past the hour, and we've had a pretty good conversation so far, but I'm looking forward to hearing from more of you. 503-325-0010. What do you do to release trauma, to maintain your mental health? Do you have any experiences with EMDR or tapping or having success with a dietary change? I know that diet was a big part of my life. I had, I suppose, what they call irritable bowel syndrome. And it turned out that it was most significantly related to processed foods, grains, in particular wheat. And so that term gluten-free, you know, is kind of an umbrella term. But that doesn't mean that I know really what's going on. But I know that the inflammation went away when I stopped eating processed grains. And I have a particularly strong motivation to take care of my gut health because my mother passed at a very young age from colon cancer. And so I'm high risk for that. And so when things seemed like that there were issues in my guts, that's a high priority for me. And the change in quality of life for me when I adjusted my diet to be more what my body likes, it was a good change. looks like Susanna's on the phone. Good morning, Susanna.
Good morning.
How are you today?
I'm good. So this is apropos people that are just waking up, and it's about dreams. I had PTS dreams for years and read lots of books on dreams. And the best book, and I don't know if it's the one called Lucid Dreaming. I can't remember which one it was, but talked about redoing your dreams. So you have, you know, PTS dreams are often recurring dreams, and just people have recurring dreams as unresolved issues often. And if you wake up from one, stay in that kind of hovery dream state. Don't get your rational mind going, but rewrite the characters in your dreams and play out a positive drama with them.
Can you give me an example?
Well, if they're a monster, change the monster into something that you can deal with, or they become either, if you need an apology from an adult, an apology, or holler back and get them to go away, or get something to back you up that will really strengthen you to get rid of something, whatever it is. And so that the dream resolves itself. But this is when you're kind of hovering awake, but still in that non-daytime rational mind, but just kind of a very dream state mind in which that you do it.
That sounds challenging.
Yes, but if you have those kinds of dreams, you'll have lots of practice.
Right.
And in your rational mind, you can think through and try to think of things that you can bring to those dream sessions so that you're ready for them. And my belief on a really effective healing therapies, the talk therapy, just as I talked about in your rational mind, can help you and understand parameters and what you're dealing with. But the real healing is in a non-rational emotional state. And I think that lately they're all talking about, is it MDR, the ecstasy drug? And they've talked about the mushroom therapies and different things. And I think they are so effective because they bring you into that emotional state.
Yeah, that was one thing that I was going to try to segue into if folks were interested in talking about it, was the fact that Oregon has legalized psilocybin mushrooms for therapy use, which sounds pretty cutting edge.
Yeah.
you know.
They're very small doses, and they are definitely, you're working with people that have experience with it.
Right.
Yeah. So, yeah, so are you going to segue into that, and I'll let you go
all
and
right.
do it?
Thanks for the call today, Susanna.
Thank you.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
You're listening to The Conversation, and we're talking mental health and treatment options for folks who have trauma. And so psilocybin treatment for mental health. Oregon became the first state to legalize therapeutic use of the drug as new research affirms its benefits for treating depression. What do you think? Have you ever used so-called magic mushrooms? And do you see this as a positive step forward? I think that my instincts are that when you can use something that occurs in the natural world as a therapeutic resource, that that's a good idea. I know that the pharmaceutical industry has created some amazing things to help balance chemicals in our brains and such. But I've also heard some bad things about the pharmaceutical industry. Being profit-driven, and we all remember the problem with opioids. 503-325-0010. What do you think about all this? Should we try some mushrooms? See if we can feel better? Under therapeutic supervision from a qualified professional, of course. Here's a little bit of music. Let's chat. And we're back, and the first person we've got on the line is Paul, who maybe remembered that other thing he was going to say. Yeah, Paul?
I do, and what I was going to say is one of the best things for stress is to get a dog.
Ah.
I swear. My doggy talks to me. He tells me what to do. The love that comes back and forth is just incredible, and it really does relieve stress. You get right into their world, and it's great fun.
Yeah, even if it's not a formal label, but all pets are emotional support animals, right?
Yes. Kitties, birds, dogs. But, you know, especially with some animals, some are more adapt to being around, being with humans and relating to them. And I think dogs are excellent at that.
Absolutely.
And they do bring happiness and relieve stress. And that's what I wanted to add.
All right. Well, thanks for checking back in with us.
Okay. Take care.
You too. Couple more folks on the line. You were next. Good morning.
Good morning.
Hi there.
Hi. I have a couple observations, and one of them is that we're not talking about our spiritual self, which would be more healing for people. And there is a man by the name of Deepak Chopra who has written so many books on the spiritual laws of success, the ultimate happiness prescription, and one of them is meditation.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we have a monkey brain, and it's constantly telling stories and creating hardships for us because it's all ego. And so once we learn to bypass that and get in touch with our spiritual being, we can be happier. And meditation is a big part. And in some schools, they're even teaching children how to meditate to calm their brain and their anxieties.
Sounds like a good school.
Yeah. And Deepak Chopra, everybody should really look him up. And as far as the mushrooms, you know, natives used to use plants, and we put them down for it.
Yeah.
And now we're realizing that they were onto something that, you know, and pharmaceuticals, unfortunately, they take a lot of the chemicals from different things, and then they make synthetic forms, which is not going to be as effective as the natural plant.
Right.
And that's one of the problems with pharmaceuticals. They create synthetic things, and our body's not made to deal with it. Our body's 10,000 years old. You know, that's our body functions, and it, the food we eat and everything we do is a 10,000-year-old body that we had. So that's one of the reasons that processed food's so hard on us, is we're not really made to digest it and use it.
Right. Yeah, I went through a phase where I was doing a lot of investigation into Eastern cultures, and Chinese medicine has a 6,000-year track record. And if they've been using the same herbs and remedies for 6,000 years, you know, you'd think they would have sloughed off the ones that don't work.
And don't forget the Ayurvedic medicine also.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. And then contrast that with the American Medical Association that was formed, you know, within the last couple hundred years. I'm not sure of the date, but I do know that they were responsible for the suppression of herbal remedies. And
Yes, because they didn't want the competition, not because the herbal remedies didn't work. I take nothing
right.
but supplements and herbs.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of very good ones out there that are very helpful.
Yeah, I was resistant to doing the supplement thing for a while. But recently I started doing a vitamin D and a multivitamin, and I've been doing well. I have not been getting sick, and I'm, oh, and a fish oil. I do a fish oil thing.
Oh, the omega-3s, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yes.
Well, thanks for your perspective. Any other thoughts for us today?
Well, I think that's it for now.
All right. Thank you. Thank you.
Bye.
And our third patient caller, you are on the air. Good morning.
Good morning.
What do you think?
I wanted to go backwards a bit to EMDR and share an experience.
That'd be great.
And it's self-disclosing, so I'm a little uncomfortable, but I think it probably has meaning to some people out there. I've got a family member that I'm estranged from, and it's very, very painful. And yet I still have to see this family member, mainly just at funerals, mm-hmm. which is a kind of an emotional time anyway. And I went to someone locally and tried EMDR to try to help me deal with to process internally, not intellectually, because I can, you know, overdo that, but it processed internally my feelings about that hurt and that distance, and it was very helpful. It's gotten me through more than once, and, you know, I don't understand it all, but I know that it works, and I think there are several therapists in the area who actually work with EMDR, you know, and tapping and that kind of thing. But it does help you to kind of lower the emotional charge on those painful experiences.
Yeah, and, you know, the goal is being a better family member and a better spouse or a better friend or a better coworker, and just better to yourself, too. You know, and that's why self-care and mental health is such an important topic for me. Because I think it helps me to treat other people better as well as myself, and that's important to me.
Yeah, and I think it's really important, and you can't always undo what happened 40 years ago, but you can be more forgiving of yourself and more accepting of others and more supportive of others. And that's how you, you know, you grow up. And I'm up there in years, but I'm continually growing up.
Yeah, and you can take control of the things that you have control of. And if you don't have control, maybe you can navigate how to relinquish the need for it. I'm curious, you said you had a family member that you prefer to not interact with, right?
No, she prefers not to interact with me.
Oh, okay. Do you think that it's important to try to gap that bridge, or do you think it's when it's more comfortable for someone to not interact, do you think that that's the best path?
Well, I think for me it's very important, because I know with my own experience, I'm up there in years, and I know that the stuff that you were not able to fix or heal, once the member, the friend or whatever is gone, it's gone, and you still have that issue within yourself. So I think it's really important, but you can only do it on the other person's timeline. And so I'm working on my own stuff around that, which is what I can do. And at some point, I'll try again to create the opportunity to work it through with her.
Yeah, the other person's timeline, and maybe by that you also mean the other person's willingness.
Yeah.
Or desire.
It's got to be her choice, and she's got to tell me about her feelings, and I've got to listen. And sometimes I jump in too quickly, and listening is a great art. You do it very well, Graham.
Well, hey, thanks. I've got a family member that I don't talk to very much, and it's a difficult and strained relationship. And I think that I worry that I beat myself up over not trying to solve the problem. But I was given that piece of advice that the other person has to meet you halfway and has to want to solve that problem too. And that relieved some of that burden, because it's like a double-edged sword to, you know, okay, you have this strained relationship. Do you continue to make it worse by beating yourself up for feeling like you're a failure for not fixing that relationship when it's not entirely your responsibility?
Yeah, and the beating yourself up does nobody any good. You know, you can work on the things that are within your control, but self-beating doesn't fix anything. It just makes you less able to be open to people around you.
Yeah. Well, thanks for your call this morning.
Sure. Bye-bye.
Bye. Well, it looks like we have a little over 10 minutes left in the show. It's The Conversation on KMUN. It's a live local call-in show, and there's 3 open lines. Looking forward to hearing from you. It seems like at around 9:57 is when the calls usually really start pouring in. So I'm going to encourage you to knock 7 minutes off your timeline and go ahead and give me a call. And hey, look, the phone lit up. Good morning. You're on the air.
Hi. Calling back here. So 2 quick things and then 1 thing about people that is hard to talk with. But the quick things are looking up psilocybin mushrooms and Michael Pollan on the internet. There's a ton of stuff now that Oregon has it, but there were quite a few interviews with Michael Pollan about his experiences using psilocybin mushrooms and other psychoactive things. I think one on Fresh Air, I thought he did a wonderful job explaining his whole journey through it all.
Yeah, and he's got a good perspective, because he's written about food and the diet and stuff before. You know, he's bringing in a pretty broad context. So yeah, I've heard that Fresh Air interview. It is great. Michael Pollan. Good resource.
The other thing that I think brings you into that kind of emotional state where you can release things or heal things is the rapid eye movement, which I did a little bit once and I could feel the effects of, but you know, different people have different paths of therapy, and it wasn't one that really spoke to me as much as others.
Mm-hmm.
And then the one I wanted to talk about people that you can't really connect up well with,
mm-hmm.
is they often love to talk about their pets. And all the stuff about trying to heal whatever in the past, one can heal their own relationship with whatever it was, but everybody has their own path, and wherever they are at, they're at. And they may never heal, but you can connect with them. And I also loved Ram Dass,
mm-hmm.
and he talks at times about his father, he and his relationship with his father. As a young man, he turned away from his father because he was a banker, and all the father was interested in was that world of banking money. And then as his father got old and they all reconnected, being present, Ram Dass being present to his father, what was important to him, and if his father wanted to talk to him about banking, well, that was fine. He was connecting with his father, and he had a whole different reaction to it. And so if you only talk about their dog, cats, turtle, fish, whatever, that's still a connection, and it's often an easy way to start talking to people because it's not laden with anything.
That's a good tip.
Yeah.
Animals being therapeutic in more ways than one.
Yes, yes. Thank you.
Thanks okay. for calling back.
Mm-hmm.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Well, gosh, 3 empty phone lines, and I've run out of things to say. So I'm going to hand the mic to you, 503-325-0010. I'm going to scan this Scientific American article about using psilocybin for therapeutic treatments. But really, I just want to hear from you. Why don't you give us a call? Tell us about your experiences with trauma or therapies that have worked for you. How do you maintain your mental health? How do you release past trauma? Do you think that, you know, there are some who have said, oh, I've had trauma, but I have grown for it, and it's built character, and I'm a better person. Or I experienced trauma in my workplace, and it was part of the job, but I don't feel like I've held on to it. I'm curious about that, the awareness aspect of trauma, because I think it's capable of hiding, and I think that I mentioned before that tendency for us to think, oh, other people have it worse, so I don't deserve to talk about my trauma. And I think that even small things can be traumatic depending on the time that you experience them or the context you experience them. There's no wrong answers here, and we hope to hear from you. 503-325-0010. There are now only 2 open phone lines because we have a caller. Good morning. You're on the air.
Good morning.
What do you got for us today?
Well, I was listening. I was just popped on, and I wanted to talk about the woman that said, you know, she was trying to reconnect with, you know, I think it was her sister, and you know, I have a estranged brother and also an estranged mother.
So, an estranged brother and an estranged mother. It's a little hard to hear you. Are you talking right into your phone's microphone?
Yeah.
Go ahead. Are you there?
Yeah, I'm here.
Okay, let's try again. Keep going.
Okay. I do not have a relationship with my brother and my mother, and I spent most of my childhood and most of my adult life trying to inject myself into their lives. And at a certain point, I kind of came to the realization that, you know, I had like a spiritual awakening at one point, and I just kind of realized that, you know, it's okay that I don't have a relationship with these people because I truly believe that we're supposed to meet people for certain reasons. And, you know, everybody knows that, you know, coincidences are real. And, you know, you meet somebody maybe to meet somebody else, to meet somebody else.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, if it wasn't for my mom, I would have never met my wife, who is, you know, my soulmate. And so I really think that, you know, we were only supposed to be in each other's lives until she introduced me to that person. And then by me, you know, really trying to stay in the relationship with my mother, who obviously, she told me over and over again in so many ways that she didn't want to be in my life, I had to kind of come to that reality and just let it go. And once I was able to let it go, and it was very painful, of course, because she's my mother, once I was able to let that relationship go, I became a lot happier, you know?
Yeah.
And it's been about 7 or 8 years since I've even spoken to her. And, you know, I it's almost like I used to be angry at her, but now I'm, like, excited that she's on her journey and that I'm on my journey, and it's totally okay that we're not. Because when we were in each other's lives, it was just not good. Because I expected her to be a certain way, you know, motherly and all that stuff, and she didn't want that role.
Mm-hmm.
And so now she's not in my life, but I thank her every day for what I did learn from her that was positive and the connections I made through her.
Well, it sounds like you definitely found a healthy way to process that. Are you comfortable saying why the relationship was strained, why she didn't? Because that's difficult news to receive from your mother.
Yeah, she basically, you know, I was born in 1972, so I'm about 50. And, you know, my father was, you know, cheating on her, and she found out, and I had an older brother, 3 years older, and she basically, you know, as my dad, quoting my mom, the diapers are in the cupboard, see you later. Wow. And in the 70s, it was unheard of for a mother to leave.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, growing up, and I never saw her when I was a child, you know, they moved, you know, 500 miles away, and we just didn't see each other. And I didn't start seeing her until I was, you know, maybe 10, 11 years old. And I would, you know, my dad would ship me off to her house, and she lived way in the mountains, which was the only positive thing because I learned how to fish and enjoy nature and things like that. But, you know, it was just, she was abusive, you know, she would hit me with a wooden spoon when I was bad and all that kind of stuff. I never experienced any kind of, you know, negative experiences with my father, just love. Mm-hmm. And then I was shipped off to this woman who was just like really felt forced to seeing us. And so I, you know, begged and pleaded. It didn't want to go because I didn't like this woman. I didn't feel the motherly connection that you would think you would feel. And
so I get the sins of the father were sort of placed on you, that you and your brother reminded her of the pain that your dad caused.
Absolutely. And funnily enough, you know, interestingly, my brother always like rejected me as, you know, children. I know, you know, siblings fight, but it was different. Like he hated me, you know, and I was always trying to be like, hey, how come you don't let me go with you? How come you don't like me? All the way into adulthood, he hated me, and I was just kind of trying to figure out why. But I think, you know, because he was 4 years old when this happened, I think he blamed me.
Right.
You know, because this happened right after I was born. Like, I was a baby, and I was brought up by my dad and my grandmother, who, you know, thank God she lived close to us. And, you know, I think that's what started my brother not liking me. But yeah, and then into adulthood, you know, the last straw was, you know, my stepfather, who I really enjoyed growing up, he taught me how to fly fish, and I, you know, I'm actually going fly fishing today. And it was interesting, you know, he was in the hospital, he had something wrong with him, and I was calling him every day, you know, to like just give him well wishes. And they're practicing Buddhists, and they're spiritual people, you know, to some extent. And I remember hearing in the background, you know, I'd called in the morning and I'd called in the evening, and I remember hearing my mom in the background say, "God, is he going to call us all day long?" You know, and I was, that really hurt because I was going out of my way to like make sure everything was okay. I was worried, and she just had this way about her that just, And I kind of just, that was the last straw. And I just said, you know what? I'm not going to call anymore. And guess what? She doesn't call me. And that was a long time ago. But, you know, I'm better off. My family's better off because she's just kind of toxic, if you know what I mean.
Well, I appreciate you sharing the way you navigated a really difficult family situation, and you've made the best of it, and you're seeing the positive, and I'm impressed, and I'm proud of you, and good work. Keep it
right
up.
Right on. Thanks a lot. Thanks for the show. Appreciate it.
I appreciate the call. Have a great day.
Take care.
Thanks to everyone who joined us for today's conversation on KMUN. Tune in next week. We'll chat some more. If you've got an idea for a topic, email me, graham@kmun.org.